Did you know that the red tulip is a worldwide symbol for Parkinson's disease? In 1980, a Dutch horticulturist developed the red and white tulip. It was beautiful, it was new, it was special, and he had Parkinson's disease. So he named the tulip in honor of Dr. James Parkinson. The tulip, with its vibrant colors and delicate petals, has come to symbolize hope, renewal, and the ongoing search for a cure for Parkinson's disease. Our guest today, Martha Carland, is a part of that search. She's the co-founder of BiotiQuest and the Bio Collective, and she's made it her life's work to research the connection between the gut microbiome and Parkinson's disease. From the surprising benefits of exercise to the role of parasites and the power of probiotics, Martha is going to share all her insights and experiences in this eye-opening episode today. Before we dive into our discussion, though, we have a humble request for you. If you found value in our podcast and haven't yet taken a moment to rate or share your thoughts with a written review, we'd implore you to consider doing so. Reviews hold significant influence, helping others discover our show among the millions of other podcasts out there. It's an action that amplifies the critical conversations about health that we're striving to share with the world. Your contribution will fuel our mission and empower us to continue delivering content that we hope you find helpful and inspiring. Thank you in advance. And now, let's join Martha for the conversation. In part one, we discussed the noisy side of Parkinson's and gut health. Today, we're diving into the silent part, the things she's learned over her journey that aren't widely shared enough that can help you protect your brain health, your gut health, and take care of yourself even more effectively. Are you ready to change your tomorrow and start feeling good again? You're in the right place. Grab your coffee, and together, let's start doing wellness differently. I'm Heather Young, a certified personal trainer.
And I'm Jennifer Klutz, a registered dietitian nutritionist. Join us for conversations that will inspire you to ask better questions, remove the overwhelm, and discover what you can do to change your health now.
Welcome to the Critical Conversations Podcast. What was the first moment where you uncovered something that you hadn't heard, hadn't been told to you in the neurologist's office, and you hadn't come across it, and it stood out to you like someone was saying it with a megaphone?
Oh, gosh. there are so many things. But, you know, one kind of a midpoint thing was stumbling into meeting a researcher named Dr. Jay Alberts, who had stumbled across. So he was a cyclist, and he did the ride across Iowa, and he had a friend with Parkinson's who rode on a tandem bike with him one of the years that he did that. And at the end of the day, the friend said, you know, I didn't need my medication today. And Jay kind of looked at that, and they talked about it through the rest of the days of the ride. And he went back and started to study it and basically learned that exercise could reduce the symptoms by about 35% if you rode a stationary bike a minimum of three times a week at a 80 or 90 RPM cadence. And we went into John's neurologist at the time and were talking to him about that. And he just kind of rolled his eyes and looked at us and was like, you know, that's not going to do anything.
And no.
Yeah. It turns out now, you know, fast forward all these years later, that was back in like maybe 2008. 2007, that doctor now does recommend exercise to people. But, you know, there was just such a huge disconnect with this. You know, we were in with this neurologist who did all this cutting edge research and clinical trials and all of this. And, you know, he looked at us, of course, you know, exercise is basically free, or, you know, it can be free or can cost a little bit if you go to the Y or something. But I don't know. That was kind of a big epiphany for me.
So it sounds like you even had epiphany in the moment where he poo-pooed it and was like, that's not going to do anything. And that in of itself is always a surprising moment when you're like, but this seems pretty compelling to me, but you're not even interested in reading the study to see if your mind might change about it?
Yes. So in the microbiome lens, I have an advisor for my company. Dr. Rita Colwell is a world-renowned infectious disease researcher, studied cholera and has done work around the globe in water quality. And I was looking at the dashboard of genomic data, and she had founded the company that had the software for that. And so we were sitting at a conference, and I had one of John's samples up in front of me. And she said, "Whose sample is that?" And I said, "Well, that's my husband John's sample." And she said, "Oh, well, that organism right there could be causing most of his symptoms." And I said, "You're kidding me." And it was a parasite called Toxoplasma gondii. And she said, and so I said, "Well, it's in a bunch of his samples." So I pulled them up, and it was in oral and fecal samples. And she said, if it's in his oral and fecal samples, that's an intracellular parasite. And that's an indication that he has had that for a very long time, and maybe even in your utero. And so I went back and started researching it. And there were multiple papers in Europe on toxo as a potential cause of Parkinson's. And we had a very open-minded internist at the time. And I just went into the office of the internist and said, "Look, here's the research. Here's his microbiome sample. Would you treat him for the toxo?" And at that time, John was having some memory issues. And he treated him with Bactrim for 6 weeks. And he treated me, I didn't take it for 6 weeks, but I did take it.
Very smart.
Within 7 to 10 days, his memory was just cleared up. No more yellow sticky notes. And the kids came home and they were like, "Mom, like, what did you do this time?" It's kind of fun, you know. And so we've had different episodes of that, I'll say, of, you know, looking and finding things in his microbiome and doing, you know, taking some sort of remediation step to help that.
What I find really interesting is what you said. I had never heard that there was certain parasites, because you said in utero. So parasites can be passed from the mother to the baby?
Yes. And toxo in particular, I guess, is well known for that.
Oh.
So I ended up, so part of my education in microbiology, I have to give kudos to This Week in Microbiology, This Week in Virology, This Week in Parasitism, This Week in Evolutionary. But it's basically, there's a whole series of podcasts by the American Society of Microbiology. Mm-hmm. And they've now added in the last two or three years, This Week in Immunology and This Week in Neurology. It's like way too many. I can't keep up with them now. But I learned so much in the early stages of founding the company by listening to those podcasts, because they would either talk about a paper. Sometimes they would bring the researchers who did the research on and talk about the paper, or just talk amongst the host, which was, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5, you know, microbiologists or virologists or whatever the expertise is. So when the toxo issue came up, I went to This Week in Parasitism, and there was a 2-part series on toxoplasma. And, you know, I sat and listened to it like 3 times with my white flip charts, writing notes about all these different things and mapping it to Parkinson's disease. And I was like, wow, there is a lot of overlap here.
Wow. But that's also exciting, though, because it means that over in Europe, they are doing research on this parasite and figuring out the long-term effects that you can get from it.
Yes. And even in the United States, I actually found a large-scale, like a meta-analysis from University of Chicago looking at all neurological disorders and connections to toxoplasma.
Mm. Which do you know, like, what it does? Where does toxoplasma come from? Does it come from soil? Does it come from food? Like, what are your exposures for getting that parasite?
It's known as the crazy cat lady thing. So it is transmitted by cats, but it's not just transmitted by cats. So it can be transmitted in other ways through other animals. And I think I'd have to go back and look, but I think it can actually be transmitted through meat. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head either. So that's why I was wondering.
Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting.
So that was pretty fascinating. And toxo is something, if you are treated for it, because it's a parasite that has a lot of different stages, you actually have to treat periodically. And we didn't do that. So after COVID, when he was still struggling with the long COVID, we went to see another doctor to help with the long COVID. And part of that conversation was going back to the toxo. And so he was treated again for toxo.
And it sounds like you might have noticed that it helped with the long COVID as well.
Yes, it did help with the long COVID. So we did that. And then actually, I had a customer who called me. So I get a lot of people from Dr. William Davis. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's the wheat belly super gut.
Yeah.
We just love him. And a lot of his people in his inner circle make yogurt with my Sugar Shift probiotic. And
yeah, because it has the reuteri in it, correct?
Because it has the reuteri in it, yes.
Yeah.
And I had one of my customers who was making yogurt for herself with it write me a note. I think I had maybe talked on either on a podcast or she had heard me say something about John having long COVID. And she called to let me know she had a customer who had developed Parkinson's symptoms after having a very severe case of COVID. And she said it was really so bad. He couldn't hold a spoon. He couldn't walk across the room. I mean, it was kind of a sudden onset of Parkinson's. And she said she made this probiotic for her husband with Parkinson's. I'm going to make a really high count yogurt for my neighbor. And so she basically made a yogurt that was probably 800 billion or more CFUs in it. And she made it for him every week. And she told me a month later that his symptoms, I mean, they weren't totally gone, but they were so much better. And so I started making I had not been making yogurt for John. And I started making the yogurt for John with the Sugar Shift, with the high count. And that also did seem to help him.
That's such a simple thing.
Yeah. How many capsules is that?
Well, that was 10 capsules. That was starting with 10 capsules. And so then because of that, and I had so many people out of Dr. Davis's group making yogurt, we actually decided to make a jar that just has a scoop in it.
Love it.
You know, I probably need to go back and reformulate that into the little packets because, you know, in a open jar.
Good idea.
And it'll start to harden, but it still works, but you know, get a little crusty inside there.
That would make sense, though, if it was like a standard tear pack for making your yogurt starter. And it would just, I think that's cool. It's cool you already have it in a jar. And then that could be a really awesome way to just create efficiency around doing it.
Yeah, it helps to make it consistently.
Uh-huh.
Well, and then I have people, you know, I have people who don't want to swallow a capsule.
Yeah.
And so you just sprinkle it on their food, put it in a smoothie, you know, make yogurt, you know. You can ferment fruit juice with it too, you know.
Because I'm always trying to find creative ways to motivate people to make their own yogurt or even at least explore reading the backs of the yogurts that they're buying. Because from, you know, working with a lot of people, right, the general population believes that any yogurt is the same. Oh. And unfortunately, it is not the same. And just bridging that gap of opening the conversation of, can you go flip the back of your Yoplait yogurt and tell me, do you see any list of good bacteria on the back of it, right? Just starting that of like, okay, now I want you to go to the store and I want you to look at this brand and tell me, do you see a list of bacteria that you've never seen before on the yogurt that you're buying? And just even starting that conversation of, do you know what bacteria is in your yogurt? Is that bacteria going to help what we need it to help as far as like your gut issues or other things that we're trying to support? Because just getting that piece of the conversation started of, you know what, there's a reason why, you know, this store-bought yogurt might be a little bit more expensive than this store-bought yogurt because the good stuff that's in it, it's completely different.
Right. It does take some education, but I have learned a lot actually from Dr. Davis's super gut fans and all the fermentation. And so I had been doing a lot of fermentation things. So I have on our YouTube channel and on our blog, I do some fermented foods. And one that has been really also beneficial for John, I make is called a fire cider. And that's fermented. I mean, it's a lot of stuff, but it's like ginger, horseradish, garlic, onions, turmeric, apple cider vinegar, lemon, honey, and I put rosemary and thyme in it, mm-hmm. and hot peppers. I think that's all of it. But anyway, you ferment that for like 6 weeks and then you strain all the solids out of it and you just drink a shot of that before you eat your meal. And it, you know, it's giving you that acid to help digest and lots of really great bioactive compounds from all of those things like ginger and horseradish. So I love doing all that stuff.
I love that you make that for him. It is, once you've done it a time or two, a lot more simple than people think because you get in a groove with it. But it is something that is combining so many good things for the body. And I don't know if you've ever seen, like, I'm sure you have with the research you do, but like when they put foods under a microscope and you kind of see this cross-sectional slice of the cells, like a potato will look like a kaleidoscope because the cellular structure is just so beautiful inside of it. And many foods are like that. And our body is a cellular structures. We just kind of run around in modern society and don't really envision the complex creation that it is. And I think something like fire cider, I'm like, I want to know what that looks like under a microscope with all of those things compounded together. I'd be really curious to know.
I bet it's really interesting under the microscope, but it's interesting you talk about plant cellular structure because we did a study with Don Huber. So we also have a company that makes probiotics for soil to help plants and clean up problems in the soil and help agriculture yield. But in this study, it goes back to the minerals and mineral deficiency. So Dr. Huber was hired to look into soggy sauerkraut. So this company had lost quite a bit of money on one large batch of organic sauerkraut that didn't maintain its structure. Huh. And they had looked at the salt they use. They had looked at the mineral content of the, so they found that the mineral content in the cabbage was deficient of copper, boron, and manganese. And they knew they had added it to the soil. So they were trying to figure out like what was the, how, why did the plant not take up the minerals? And those copper, boron, and manganese are really critical for that cellular structure. And they basically found they used poultry manure as a fertilizer and the poultry manure had glyphosate and the glyphosate bound up the minerals. And then the cabbage didn't have the minerals for the structure. And so I think about that, you know, for us, for building our structures and our cellular structures, again, how important those minerals really are. And, you know, some of these complex fermentations, because you've got a lot of different microbes and they're dealing with a lot of different things, I think you're much more likely to be able to tolerate and deal with the things that we're coming in contact with in our food supply if you have a more diverse microbiome with kind of the toolkits to detoxify and deal with the things that we're coming across.
Yes. Like my dad likes to say, if you have more good helpers in your gut, all those little people running around who are picking things up and removing them, you're more likely to not have as many chronic conditions or symptoms, because we haven't even touched on everything that the microbiome, I think, is helping with or responsible for. But just knowing what it does for even generating vitamins and minerals, but then also how it removes things, it really is just amazing what it does, and it's doing it with bugs and different things.
Well, actually, preparing a talk giving next week, and it's called Microbes, Minerals, Membranes, and Messages. And I mean, it's all just about like how amazing the microbiome, not just our microbiome, but the earth microbiome, the plant microbiome, the animal microbiome, and our microbiome, and the importance of maintaining a healthy microbiome, because that is all these goods and services. It's your vitamins, hormones, neurotransmitters. All of those things are happening in your gut with the bacteria. And if you are missing half of the bacteria, then it's like having a your factory workers on strike. You know, you can't make a lot of the things that you need to be healthy.
Exactly. That's a great analogy of being like, okay, you have all these people, you have these workers in there, and 50% of your work crew just striked on you. And we need to build back that work crew. And so I'm very curious with the research that you have done, because you know how there's certain bacteria that help to make B vitamins and even vitamin A in the gut. With everything that you've looked at, what have you seen as far as, one, some of those needed bacteria being lacking in certain conditions? But two, I'm very curious to see, like, the body's really smart. Do you often see also those types of bugs being upregulated in the gut? Like the body's trying to generate more of them because dietary-wise, say you're not bringing in enough B vitamins.
Well, I'd have to go back in and really look at the data to be specific about the vitamins. What I can say is, I've looked at a number of things on the Parkinson's side where we can see differences in either detoxification pathways or loss of function in Parkinson's. Like the butyrate-producing bacteria are very low in Parkinson's. Bifidobacteria that make plasmalogens are very low in Parkinson's. And of course, butyrate is needed to feed the cells in the gut lining and keep that barrier integrity strong. So having low butyrate producing bacteria is definitely, a big issue that we see. The shortage of vitamin production or vitamin producing bacteria is actually one of the main drivers of how we started to look at our formulations. So the sugar shift formula, for example, is one that does that B vitamin production. The team is coming in there to help with those B vitamins. We have designed a vitamin A product, but we haven't brought that to market yet.
That's very exciting.
We definitely see that was one of the things when we first started to look at formulation. We kind of mapped out and looked at, okay, which vitamins are made by which bacteria. And unfortunately, some of the best producers of some of the vitamins are pathogens.
Yeah.
We think of them as pathogens. And so, I've really started to think more about, it's really more the terrain and, things that we call pathogens. Perhaps they're behaving in a pathogenic way because the terrain has gone awry. And if everything were in balance and they were there producing that vitamin that they're, uniquely best at producing at higher levels, maybe everything would be okay. But, we have taken since the onset of antibiotics, and maybe before that, but definitely with the onset of antibiotics, we've kind of taken a killing approach. You know, kill it, cut it out, destroy it, radiate it. And I'm really coming to think more that the whole terrain theory of, you know, setting the terrain of the body, you know, focusing on the pH, focusing on the diet, and getting that right allows the body to do what it was designed to do. I mean, it's a really amazing, amazing machine with all these backup systems and ways of dealing with things. And we could use a different perspective, I think, as we start to learn how important the microbiome is. And pretty much every medication out there has some effect on the microbiome, and the microbiome has some effect on it. So I think as we learn more and more about how these microbes are interacting and how they're helping us, I mean, we're really more microbial than we are human, that we're going to have to take a different perspective on how we approach medicine and medications that we're putting down the GI tract and their impact on the microbes.
I am so glad that you said that, because even myself as a practitioner, you know, I come from the era where, you know, you see opportunist bacteria or parasites or bad bacteria in, you know, a stool test, and, you know, you're going at it with herbs or even going and getting prescriptions. And where I have come to over the years of just learning and reading so much more about the microbiome is that, right, even bad or opportunistic bacteria is allowed to be higher, or, you know, being in the gut at the levels that it's at for some reason, right? Whether or not you don't have enough of the good bacteria that's supposed to be keeping it in check, and XYZ. And I've completely changed how I help people with gut health symptoms by understanding that just going in and removing, I haven't seen long-term success with that. And what I have seen long-term success with is changing how I interpret or look at someone who comes to me and they're like, hey, I did this stool test. Can, you know, give me your perspective on it? And what I have found is a lot of times when I'm looking at it, I've started to look at the ratios of bacteria and cataloging how many of these are nutritionally related. Like, how many of these actually produce B vitamins? How many of these produce vitamin A? And then looking at, you know, their diet and seeing, do I believe that there's enough of this nutrient in that, in their diet, where the body wouldn't think that they need to create a backup system because they just aren't getting enough of it? And, you know, just from little old, you know, it's just my practice, people I'm working with, I have found pretty high correlation with people who do not eat enough B vitamins, or they're not absorbing B vitamins well, especially and vitamin A, where you start supplementing those nutrients specifically. And the besides changing their overall dietary pattern to making sure that the dietary fiber is what it should be, the phytochemicals are what they should be, and it completely without doing any like kill or, you know, remove process, completely changes the microbiome the next time you check it.
I love that. There's a neurologist, her name is Dr. Gominak. I think her website has something to do with sleep, but she's done a number of interviews and she talks about the B vitamins and that being one of the main drivers of neurological problems, and that, you know, the loss of the gut bacteria and nutrition, but that you really do need to supplement with those B vitamins while you rebuild the microbiome. And then you're mm-hmm. able to step back because you've got the microbiome in place to do what you need to do. One of the other things in our research in looking at Parkinson's was looking at hydrogen sulfide producing bacteria and methane producers. Mm-hmm. There are, and the methanogens are
what are called archaea, which are a little bit different than bacteria. And there's a number of published studies showing these methanogens or the hydrogen sulfide producers in Parkinson's. And you make that point of, well, they're doing something. What are they doing? And I actually have a collaboration call this weekend with really scientists all over the globe looking at what the hydrogen sulfide and the methane producing bacteria are doing in terms of potentially, I mean, this might be a little esoteric-y sounding, but basically providing deuterium depleted water in from their metabolic processes. And that's something that some of the cancer in the cancer world, they're looking at deuterium depleted water being beneficial for cancer patients. And so what we started looking at is, you know, do the gut bacteria do that work? It looks like they do. And that was part of how I got connected with these people, because I was looking at how our sugar shift probiotic in the process of converting those sugars, is it making deuterium depleted water? And anyway, that's a bit far afield, but they're there doing something. And it's interesting because people with Parkinson's actually don't get solid tumor cancers at the same rate as the general population. And so I started, and they have high methanogens and high hydrogen sulfide. So, you know, it's, we live on a razor's edge, I say. There's, you want to be balanced. There's another protein that's very elevated in Parkinson's. It's called P53, and that's called the guardian of the genome. So, you know, people with Parkinson's aren't getting, you know, they aren't getting certain diseases, but maybe the guardian of the genome is pruning the brain too much, or pruning, you know, something that it's concerned about, and you need to get balanced to the other side. So
I find all of that, one, fascinating, but also exciting, because even with just like the methane producers and the sulfur producers, it sounds like you're going to have a very interesting and promising conversation with trying to understand that piece even more. Because there's also the theory that with the methane and the sulfur, like some of them are being upregulated in certain individuals, because especially like sulfur-based probiotics, that they're helping people process sulfur because they're not able to really do it well via the alternative ways.
And that's a distinct possibility. I mean, generally, when I start to look at these, like when I started out at the very beginning, like before I started the company, and I was looking at all these names of bacteria and I had never heard of them, and I mapped them all out and said, well, okay, this is present, this is present, this, and this is what it would look like as an acute infection. So what are those symptoms? It was interesting. I could cross-reference a lot of Parkinson's symptoms to different bacteria that were present there at a lower level. And I was like, okay, so we don't have acute infection. We have a low-grade chronic infection that's there for some reason, like the immune system is unable to kick it out. So that's another area that I think, so the, you know, the microbiome trains our immune system. And, you know, my husband and I are in our 60s, and we're in that generation that was bottle fed, not breastfed. So maybe our immune systems really weren't properly trained from breast milk, because breast milk, babies used to have a species of Bifido infantis that basically made single colonies throughout their entire GI tract and kept all the everything out and trained the immune system in the early stages to not overreact to things. And we've lost that.
So can that specific bacteria also be potentially associated with food allergies or sensitivities to overreacting to environmental exposures?
It can, it, you know, if you are, if not properly trained in those early,
yeah,
early years. Yeah. Obviously. And antibiotics actually too, that was, there's a really strong correlation with overuse of antibiotics in the early years with allergy and as well.
That would make sense. Along with now, obviously, we're having more and more C-sections, which then you're not going to get exposed to specific bacteria through that process as well.
And that's so interesting because in the early stages of the company, I would go to all these conferences with all the different scientists who are doing research. And there was a lot of research on C-sections and the loss of the vaginal microbiome populating the child, and researchers who were doing, you know, for women who had C-section births, swabbing the baby with the mother's vaginal fluid to give the baby mm-hmm. the inoculation. And I said something when I went for my annual exam with my gynecologist about, you know, what my business was and about, you know, cesarean births. And I was glad I didn't have a cesarean birth, and that, you know, asking her, do you swab any of your cesareans? And she looked at me like I was crazy.
Yep.
And she's like, and then she said, and not only that, she goes, we give them all antibiotics as soon as they're born. And I was like, oh my gosh, my children got antibiotics when they were born.
Oh, wait, that's part of the C-section protocol?
Well, no, I didn't have C-section. I had a vaginal birth, but she told me.
They still did it.
Yeah.
Oh, they still gave them? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, you know, I will say, when you're talking about the gut microbiome, it's like such a perfect reflection of, we get a little overconfident, I think, in when we start to think we understand something, and then we create these treatment protocols or these like ways of thinking about something when we haven't even really scratched the surface on what the cause and effect is and truly actually really understand it. I think you can see that with all the research that you've done with your company.
Oh, yeah. And the fecal transplant, that's a whole nother very interesting area.
It's a toss up, right? Isn't it a roll of the dice as to whose poop you get?
Well, so they have actually just approved, the FDA has approved the first standardized fecal transplant. So I'm not exactly sure how they're scaling up the standardization of that, but it's a company called Rebiotics. But there was a nonprofit called Open Biome, and I think they still do this, that started very early on in the microbiome craze. It was started by a GI doctor in Boston, and he built basically a stool bank. They screened people, and only about 3% of the people who tried to be donors actually were approved. So they did a very rigorous screening process. And then they froze the stool at minus 80, and then they would provide it to GI doctors to do the transplants. But then I talked to a friend of mine who helped on the administrative side of a multi-office GI doctor. And she said, well, we don't have the minus 80 freezers, and our docs didn't want to pay the money. And so we basically just have people find their own donor and bring the sample. And I was like, ooh, that sounds pretty crazy. But, you know, they said they had had good success, but there's also some horror stories. So I had one young man who provided a sample for our bank and got his sequencing data. And, you know, we had a long conversation about, he'd had GI problems. He was probably in his late 20s or early 30s. And, you know, he was following the microbiome trends and looking at all the different companies and trying different probiotics and stuff. But he did a fecal transplant from his dad, and he actually got much worse. So, you know, I'm always tell people, like, you need to know what's there. Like, you should be screening it and knowing what's there. And, you know, I definitely don't recommend that, you know, don't try this at home. But there are physicians who are doing clinical trials. There's several Parkinson's clinical trials using fecal transplants. And there's a GI doctor in California that I'm actually talking to about doing a fecal transplant and including our probiotic in the fecal transplant.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. That's exciting. Because to build on what you already mentioned before, we're in California, so we're definitely exposed to both sides of how you can view health and wellness. And there's a strong holistic side in California. And we actually know some people who have done the quote-unquote seeding with, if you have to have a C-section birth and then you swab the baby's mouth with the vaginal secretions. Mm-hmm. But it's just literally the same as what you were talking about with the stool sample, because what they have already started to figure out is you're not swabbing high enough within the vaginal canal to be getting the best and proper population of bacteria. And it's actually more likely detrimental to the baby, because typically the lower down in the vaginal canal, you have opportunistic or not the best bacteria. Mm-hmm. And so I would currently say, based on what I have heard and what I have seen, that I wouldn't recommend seeding or doing that, because it's just too misunderstood, I think.
Right.
And then you can be introducing something not great to your baby.
Yes, there's always going to be a little wild, wild west, I think, but, but if you go back to look at fecal transplant, so I think 4,000 years ago in China, they had something called yellow soup, and that was actually a fecal transplant they basically made soup of the stool of a healthy baby and gave it to someone who was having like major GI problems.
No.
That is the most horrifying and awesome thing I think I've heard in a while.
Wow. I can't imagine eating that. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Would take a lot of ginger.
A lot of ginger. But that. I think with fecal transplants, though, they should be reserved for when nothing else is working. You have tried so many things, and then you'd be more inclined to do it.
Then, and I think they are, potentially, if they can get there, really helpful, especially like with C. diff.
Oh, yeah. There's some life or death situations where it will save your life to be able to think about doing
because,
it.
Because like what you're talking about, we know a few people where they couldn't get approved for a fecal transplant. The person was not doing well. Nothing was working treatment-wise. And then they just picked, someone in their family to do a fecal transplant with. And luckily, the few people we've known that have done that with the C. diff scenario, it actually did work.
Yeah. C. diff, I think the success rate is in the high 90s. And I mean, I think what you get there is C. diff is caused by most of the time by overuse of antibiotics and basically killing off everything except Clostridium difficile that's resistant to all those antibiotics. And then that's what you're left with. Mm-hmm. And so it's very hard to repopulate when you have this aggressive organism that has survived all of the assaults. And so the best way to do that is to like bring in the mob. So you're bringing in a whole crowd of microbes that, can say, okay, it's time to move out. We're here. We're taking over.
You're bringing in the sheriff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most amazing benefits about taking a step back from fecal transplants, just probiotics and taking probiotics. You're putting something in your digestive system that's like, okay, we're rewriting the rules here. There's a new sheriff in town. And for our listeners, for someone who really isn't as familiar with taking probiotics or what to look for, it's kind of the same as the yogurt we started with. There's miles of difference between a Yoplait yogurt with low bacteria amounts, not necessarily the most beneficial ones, and then something that has been specifically formulated for a condition or to help repopulate the gut. How do you coach people into what to look for so that they're not thinking, okay, I'm doing something good for myself. I'm taking a probiotic. People tell us this all the time. Oh, I grabbed one. I grabbed a probiotic. I'm good. And then they don't understand that there's this whole spectrum of what's available and what's been done testing-wise and production-wise to create the probiotic.
Well, one of the first places I start is like, okay, if you've been in the health food store or the grocery aisle and you're looking at all those bottles on the shelf, 95% of them are probably all pretty close to the same, because there are three major strain vendors globally. One of them is DuPont Danesco. One of them is Chr. Hansen, that's now been purchased by Novozymes. And one is Probi, which is a Swedish company. And so the large scale strain production comes from those three companies. And so all those people on the shelf that are making a formula are buying their strains from those three people. And so it's the same strain. So you're not getting a lot of diversity. So I sort of chuckle with people who are like, oh, you should change your probiotic every month or two. Well, they're all coming from the same place. And there's, you know, maybe a dozen widely used commercial strains. And there are literally thousands of probiotic organisms in fermented foods. I mean, and it just so happens that the base of our formulas, you know, we built our strain bank, and part of that is out of fermented foods. So we're making a probiotic that works like a fermented food because it's a team of organisms, like in a fermentation where they work together and cross feed each other and keep everybody happy. And we're putting together a team that is designed to produce specific function in your gut. So, you know, with our Ideal Immunity product, it's very effective at killing the foodborne pathogens like Listeria, Salmonella, E. coli. You know, we tell people that's a great one to have around for food poisoning, if you're going on foreign travel, if you're somebody who eats out at the salad bar a little too often, or, you know, eats seafood that might be coming from waters overseas. You know, take those to keep things in check. We have one that we make for sleep that actually, it has a little bit of tryptophan in it, but the organisms together as a team produce tryptophan and they produce bacterial melatonin. So, you know, it's designed to work together as a team for 7 hours to help you sleep naturally, making the compounds that you would naturally be making in your gut if you had the right bacteria. You know, we have a cardiovascular health called heart-centered, and that one is producing CoQ10 and helping you produce nitric oxide for vasodilation. So we are putting together very thoughtfully teams that work together, and we look at the genetics of the bacteria so that we know they have the function and that they that those functions will work together. And I'm not saying that every probiotic out there is terrible, but most of them are trying to, you know, just either throw a bunch in there because somebody told them, you know, the more you have, the better, but they're not thoughtfully put together as a working team. And as far as I know, I think we're the only people right now putting together these kind of working teams where we use computational biology and the genetics of the microbes to understand how they work together and making sure that they're going to do what we say they're going to do.
I love that. It's amazing because basically you created a system with each of your probiotic blends. And you figured out, okay, how do we help support the sleep system? How do we help support the cardiovascular system with bacteria? And
exactly,
that's the coolest thing. So with that, like if someone is to get your probiotics, would you say there's a blend that you typically recommend people start at? Or like, let's say someone has sleep issues and blood sugar issues. Which one of those blends would they pick, or would you tell them to rotate them?
I almost always recommend that people start with Sugar Shift because it is such a great overall metabolic support product. And people will often get the improved sleep just with Sugar Shift. I do have some people who take Sugar Shift and Simple Slumber, but my general recommendation is start with Sugar Shift because that's going to help you with your overall metabolism. And then you can start to see, okay, do I want to tweak something else a little bit? Then, you know, maybe I'll look at a different, either rotating in a product or, you know, taking one in the morning and one in the evening or something like that. But Sugar Shift is an incredible overall metabolic product because it's increasing butyrate to feed the gut lining. It's helping with those B vitamins and energy. We actually are looking at before and after in our clinical trial. It has increased production of bacteria ferritin. So it's helping with the recycling of iron, and it has strains with multi-copper oxidases. So it's helping also with the copper enzymes. I mean, the list, I could go on and on. I rave about that because that's the one my customers also just come back and tell me what a difference it has made for them.
Yeah. I mean, the science behind these is, it's amazing. So a question to layer on top of you, it sounds like you start with either one or two, taking it in the morning and the evening. And do you recommend taking it with food or without food?
You know, it's really interesting because I was talking to the gastroenterologist who's doing the fecal transplants, and she always recommends that people take them away from food. But we actually recommend, well, we recommend that the Sugar Shift they take with food because it's working with and on the food that you're eating. It's helping you digest that food. It's helping you extract the nutrients from that food, and it's converting the sugars in that food. So in our clinical trial, we did, you know, the people took it with meals.
And they took it with two meals, or did you have them in that trial do three meals?
They did they were eating three meals, but they just took it in the morning and the evening. I have a group of physicians and healthcare practitioners in Israel who use that, the Sugar Shift product, for their long COVID patients. And they actually have them take it three times a day. And I need to ask them if they're having them take it on an empty stomach or not. But
yeah,
that
would be interesting. Yeah.
We're gonna wrap up. We always ask a standard final question because you've been very generous with your time. And what's interesting is, like, I'm raising my hand saying, but I have so many more questions.
I do.
So many more. But for now, I want to wrap up with the final question we always ask all of our guests. And that is, it's going to be a little bit of a different lens because usually we ask it specifically for the person who we're interviewing. But in this context, I'm going to ask it in the lens of you and your husband, John. And that is, what is one change that you feel was the most instrumental in your wellness journey together that you'd like to pass on to our listeners because you believe it could change everything for them?
I think in our journey together was that recognition of how I was creating stress that was contributing to his disease.
I think it takes a special kind of person to say that. But because you're willing to say that, people will be able to maybe recognize that and pull that stressor out of their own lives as well. And I commend you for being authentically honest with your journey. It's powerful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for everything that you shared. I cannot wait to be able to ask you more questions, hopefully in the future, because I have a lot more.
And
but,
see what you develop, too.
Yes, and to see what you bring to market. I'm really genuinely excited about that probiotic that you're working on for vitamin A. That just sounds really so needed, honestly. So hopefully it actually happens and you can bring it to market.
Well, just takes a little time and money.
Yeah, so where can people find your probiotics? Like, do they just go to your website? Are you also on Amazon?
So they can go to our website, which is bioticquest.com, or Amazon. We are on Amazon. Not all of the products, or the yogurt starter is not on Amazon. And we have a lawn and garden, the product we make for soil, that's only on our website.
That's fantastic.
See, that's a whole other conversation that, yes, I didn't let myself ask that question because, you know, we're using so much more animal, like we're using so much more manure that just from our farm background with our grandparents and our parents that I just don't think is helping our food supply. And so eventually I would love to get your take on what we're doing with manure and that whole piece of things, because I definitely think that's contributing to some of the chronic conditions that we're seeing environmentally.
I'd love to come back and bring Raul Cano with me. He's my chief scientific officer, but he's also the founder of the Ag Company. And he's really the super genius of the microbial world. And I think we could have a great conversation about all of that and what's going on with our food.
That sounds wonderful.
We would love to do that, because then we can promote that product that you've developed that I think is really helpful for anyone who is trying to grow their own food or fix their soil.
Or just create a healthier lawn for their kids to run around.
Yeah.
On. So we'll have to make that happen. And in the meantime, thank you for your time today and all the unbelievable insight you offered us and our listeners. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Isn't Martha amazing? Jennifer and I are so inspired by her wisdom and her systems approach to the body. Her company produces extremely targeted probiotics. You heard us discuss some of them. We use them and we highly recommend them when they make the right fit for a client that we're working with. She's given us a coupon code for you to use if you'd like to try them yourself. Now, before I give it to you, I need to emphasize we are ruthless about only discussing products and brands that align with our very high standards for quality and efficacy, and these meet that standard. If you'd like to try them as well, the code is SHECHANGES, all capital letters, all one word, for a 10% discount. If you didn't already catch part one, you can go back and listen to that. It's more of Martha's journey with John through Parkinson's, and it's invaluable if you care about your brain health. We'll be back next week with another critical conversation, and in the meantime, be kind to yourself in the process of change.